This is Rainmaker FM, the digital marketing podcast network. It's built on the Rainmaker platform, which empowers you to build your own digital marketing and sales platform. Start your free 14-day trial at chrisducker.com/Rainmaker.
This is Youpreneur FM, the official podcast of the Youpreneur Mastermind Community. A place where no entrepreneur gets left behind in their pursuit of building a business they can be proud of.
And now,
here's your host, serial entrepreneur and best-selling author, Chris Ducker.
Well, hello and welcome to episode number 163 of Youpreneur FM. Thank you so much for being with me. I greatly, greatly appreciate it. Got a brilliant, sincerely brilliant show lined up for you today. My good friend Michael Hyatt from michaelhyatt.com is back on the show talking about his new book, Living Forward, and actually a really candid discussion with Michael, not only on the book, but also a lot of other stuff as well. So that's coming up. Before we get into that, however, just want to remind you very quickly of our brand new Youpreneur Launchpad course. This is a course that I put together as a combination of slide deck and audio recordings, PDF downloads, and live on-stage keynote footage of myself, plus a whole lot of other stuff included, which will really just sort of help you catapult everything you're doing when it comes to building a business based around you, your personal brand, those that you want to serve, the problems you want to solve for those people that you're serving, and a lot more. Sincerely, guys, this is like the best free training that I've ever put together, sincerely, and you can get it right now, instantly, by heading over to chrisducker.com/launchpad. Okay, so on to my chat with Michael. You know, Michael and I have become good friends over the last few years, even though we've only spent, I would have thought, probably about 5 or 6 hours in each other's company in actual real life. But I have a lot of respect for Michael and what he does, who he does it for, and the way that he does it. And his new book, Living Forward, which has just come out and is doing very, very, very well. His new book, Living Forward, A Proven Plan to Stop Drifting and Get the Life You Want. He co-authored it with Daniel Harkavy. And honestly, guys, I mean, you'll hear me talk about this in the conversation with Michael. I didn't think the world needed another life planning / self-help book. I told Michael that as well, right at the top of the conversation. Yet when I read this book, it really helped me. It got me thinking a lot about legacy and what I'm leaving behind and the work that I'm doing and who I'm doing it for. So I know you're going to love this conversation with Michael. Strap up, get a notepad and a pen, because we literally go through the entire book here for you. It's like a condensed audiobook version. So good. Here's myself and Michael. Enjoy the chat. So Michael, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Chris. Always good to be with you.
It is. It's always nice to spend some time with you. And I feel like it's been a while since we've really last spoken, but here we are. We're 10 minutes into just goofing off for the first 10 minutes of this Skype call. And I feel like we're almost hanging out on a weekly basis already. It's great.
I know. We just kind of picked up where we last left off.
Where did we last left off? When was the last time we saw each other? I think it...
Well, was it Nashville?
I think it was when we had dinner.
Yeah. That was a great, great evening.
It was. We shared bourbon ice cream.
Oh, that was so good.
There's photographic evidence of you and me with a little cocktail glass with two spoons somewhere on Instagram.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, that was fantastic.
It was a good night. So, man, you are back with a vengeance here. So many different ways we could go with this. And with all your years in the publishing game, you know, when someone, and as you know, I was in the publishing business for like 8 years in the UK. So you know, I've got that affinity with you. And I love the publishing world. I love books. I hate ebooks. I can't do electronic books. I want to see, I want to feel. This is me smacking yep. Michael's new book. I need to see, feel, touch, and smell a book to truly appreciate it. Are you of the same mindset?
Well, I got really on the ebook bandwagon early on. And of course, we were in the middle of that whole revolution when I was the CEO of Thomas Nelson Publishers.
Yeah, just shaking things up.
Oh, we leapt into the middle of it. But just this year, I announced this on my blog, I'm going back to physical books because I noticed that I was reading less than ever. I had historically been a voracious reader, but there's something about books on a Kindle. I know it's convenient, all that stuff, but it's kind of out of sight, out of mind.
Absolutely.
And when I see the books stacked up on my desk or on the shelf, they're just kind of begging me to come read them.
Yeah, exactly. And I remember you saying to me with Virtual Freedom, it's been on my nightstand for a week. I'm going to start reading it tonight, I promise.
Yeah.
But it's the funny thing is it's also for me is you run out of space, right? Like if you were a real reader, I don't know how many books you would average, say, a month. I would say I do probably 2 books a month pretty religiously, yeah. Right? So I'm lucky I'm to the point, just as you are probably, where you get the majority of them for free nowadays. People right. send them yeah. to you. So it's kind of like, oh my gosh, I've got this book and I got to read it. Like it's free. I know that's the worst part. I know the author personally. I got to read the book, right? And I'll be honest with you. You know me pretty good by now. You know I don't mix my words. I tell it how it is. When I first heard about Living Forward, which is your new book, A Proven Plan to Stop Drifting and Get the Life You Want. When I first heard about this, my first reaction was, very honestly, does the world really need another life planning book? Because there's a whole bunch of them out there. But then I started reading it. And this is like, it truly is a step-by-step, let me hold your hand, I'll make you feel warm and fluffy, life planning masterclass. I mean, that's what it is. And I think the world does need that. The world does need that. It doesn't need another little silly book about why you need to live life with purpose and all the rest of it. We've got tons of them out there. But this right. is different than that. This is really, it's structured, it's inspiring, and it really does motivate the hell out of you to actually sit down and plan this out.
Fantastic. Well, that's great to hear. And that's exactly what we were going for. And, you know, I have a basic rule in anything I write. It's got to come out of my experience. I have to have proven it in my own personal experience right. before I'm going to write about it. You know, I just don't go research something and then think, hey, this would sell, so let's write it. So my platform book was the same way, came mm-hmm. out of my experience as a blogger and trying to build my platform. This book has come out of 15 years of life planning and really testing this stuff. How it works in a, you know, very demanding job, very demanding career, a large family, you know, trying to keep all that stuff in balance and giving it the appropriate attention. And this really does work. And Daniel Harkavy, who's my co-author, mm-hmm. runs an executive coaching company called Building Champions, and his clients are amazing. You know, Nike and Wells Fargo and Chick-fil-A and a number of big companies.
Big firms,
and,
yeah.
Yeah, and they've adopted life planning because those CEOs know that life is not compartmentalized so that you can just do work and then you can go home and, you know, have your health failing or be going through a marriage crisis and it yeah. not impact your work. It all impacts everything else. And they know that the most engaged employees, the most productive, the most focused are those that don't have to be worrying about their health when they're at work or worrying about their marriage or their kids or anything else. All that is in balance, and it just makes for a much more satisfying, more healthy life.
That's what I loved about it. And I want to deep dive into every chapter because there's only 10 of them, and we've got 30, 40 minutes. We can do this. We're grown yeah. men. We can control our chit-chat tendencies. But, I mean, what I liked about this was that chapter 10 was – and correct me if I'm wrong here because I've
right.
just gone through the whole book. But chapter 10 was Join a Revolution, and it was about – getting your employees on this bandwagon. It was about getting your employees to sit down and actually go through planning their life. And in the introduction, you say, you know, ask yourself the question, what do you want people to say about you when you're dead?
Yes.
And you mention it's morbid. I get it. But it's a question you've got to ask yourself because we only get one life to live, right?
That's right.
Why do you think it's so important to add that last chapter? We'll go to the others, but I'm really okay. curious because I know you obviously have a team around you. I have hundreds of people working for me, so it's really got me thinking about what I can do with those guys as well as
sure.
just myself and the people that I serve in my community.
Well, I was working for a man, one of the last bosses I ever had. This was in the publishing business before I became the CEO of Thomas Nelson, and he was going through a divorce, and you know. Terrible experience, obviously, for him. He was spending a lot of time with his lawyers. It was a nasty kind of divorce.
It's not fun.
Oh, no fun. And when he was at the office, he was locked behind a closed door, and he just couldn't engage. He was in meetings. He was distracted. He just wasn't there. You know, the lights were on, but nobody was at home.
Mm-hmm.
And what I realized then and there is that we can't so easily compartmentalize our life. And people at work, they've got all kinds of issues they're thinking about so that they can't be really present at work. They're thinking about their kid who's flunking out of school or, you know, who has a drug problem or their spouse and they're wondering why they're being estranged and where is this all leading? Or maybe their health, you know, they're having to go to the doctor for the umpteenth time for the same chronic issue. And when people can put that aside, and it's not like you can control everything. You know, life happens. There are going to be things that you can't control. But when people attend to those parts of their life, their financial life, you know, so that they're not in debt, have creditors calling and all the rest. But when they are able to be fully present in work, that's when there's the possibility of engagement and for them to give you their best effort because they're bringing everything to the game. And so that's why we wrote that chapter. I mean, we've seen that in corporations. We've seen that in businesses that we run, and we want people to experience that for themselves.
Now, I mean, obviously, Daniel, I don't know. I don't have a relationship with him like I do with you. But I mean, from obviously, I can guess from looking at his company's website, he obviously serves thousands and thousands of yes. people with the work that he does as a coach. I know you do exactly the same through the blog, through the speaking. Not so much speaking nowadays, I've noticed, but... you know, and I want to go into that actually, because I'm quite interested in how that fits okay. into the life plan as well, because you were quite hardcore on the speaking circuit for a while there. But from your perspective, how important is it to write this book and get it out into the world right now? Like how, on a scale of 1 to 10, where do you, is this just because you've got this inside you and you want to get it out there and help people? Or do you feel like we really do need this right now?
I really do think we need it. You know, you're not in the States, so, you know, you probably see it from afar and laugh at us, you know, in this political cycle. But there is so much uncertainty out there. Mm-hmm. And Stephen Covey talked about the circle of influence and your circle of concern. I don't know if you remember that from Seven Habits.
Yeah.
But all that stuff that's happening outside of our control is our circle of concern. You know, we can get all wound up and all concerned about what the economy may or may not do or what political party is going to be in power. And you can spend a lot of energy worrying and fretting about that. And yet the one thing that we can take control over and feel a huge degree of certainty is the trajectory of our own lives. And so I really see this book as an antidote to all the uncertainty in the world, is that you can take control and gain some level of certainty where it matters most, and that's where your life is headed. And most people, unfortunately, and you know this is a central metaphor in the book,
yep.
are drifting through life rather than designing their lives.
If
this story has a villain, it's the drift.
Yeah, and that's in the book. And I love that line. I thought it was fantastic. Did you write those words? Was it you or was it? Oh, so good. So good.
Thank you.
Okay, let's go through the book then. Because, like I said, 10 chapters, 3 sections. And this, by the way, guys, for you guys tuning in, this is why when I was done reading this, I honestly felt as if this was, it's a different book. It's a different life planning book. It's a different aspirational type of book, because it's 200 odd pages, just over 200 pages, 3 sections, 10 chapters, very readable. Like I blew through this, Michael, like I blew through Crush It from Gary's first book.
Yes.
Like one sitting, boom, done, over and done with. Thank you very much for playing. You know, I loved it. So let's go through it. Can we blow through it real quick?
Absolutely.
Okay.
So start with chapter 1.
That's a good idea. Let's, let's go. Let's go with that angle. That's a great idea. Yeah.
Yeah. And let me start there with the story. And Daniel has his version of this, but I've got my version of it. But when Gail, my wife and I, whom you've met,
love her,
had been married about 10 years, we decided that we're going to go on a vacation. And we didn't have much money in those days, but we saved up a lot of airline miles. And we decided to cash those in and go to Hawaii on vacation.
I love this story. You told this story at dinner. I love this story. Go on. Keep going.
Oh, did I? Okay.
It's cool. So good. Everybody needs to hear this.
Okay, so when we got to Hawaii, we didn't have any money, and we needed something to entertain ourselves for a week, so we found out that the hotel was providing snorkeling lessons for free. So we went to the swimming pool, got instructed on, you know, how to do it, how to be safe, all that stuff. Then the instructor took us out on the reef. Our minds exploded. We were blown away by what we saw there. And so we said, okay, what does it cost to rent snorkeling gear for a week? And the guy said, you can get 2 sets for about $10 for the whole week. We said, done. This is our now our new favorite hobby. We are so pumped about this.
Yeah.
So the next morning, we went out into the lagoon that was adjacent to the hotel. It was about 6 o'clock in the morning. There wasn't a soul out there. The water was just so calm. It was perfect. Like glass, barely perfect. A ripple, crystal clear. So we put on the masks and our flippers and we slip into the water, totally mesmerized by what we saw. All these multicolored species of fish. The seaweed was flowing in the current with the sunlight reflecting off of it. And we were just having the time of our lives. It was like swimming in a giant aquarium. Mm-hmm. Well, about 45 minutes later, I popped my head up just to kind of, you know, where am I? And noticed that we'd been caught in a riptide, pulled way out to sea, so much so that the hotel looked like a little toy in the distance. And Gail yanked up her head. She screamed and
started freaking out, right?
Oh my gosh. She said, what are we going to do? And we had a boogie board, thankfully.
Okay.
So we grabbed that thing and I said, we got to swim as hard as we can for the shore. And we weren't even smart enough to know you can't swim against a riptide, but it was okay. I guess it had gone away by that point. But we, about 45 minutes of hard swimming, we pulled ourselves up on the beach and we collapsed.
Yes.
And until last fall, we had never been snorkeling again.
Oh,
it was such
gosh.
A traumatic experience.
Okay, okay.
And even last fall, I didn't enjoy it that much, just remembering the previous experience. but so many people are like that. You know, they get distracted. They're busy doing something else. They don't set out to bankrupt themselves or to have a health crisis or destroy their marriage. They just drift there incrementally over time. Mm. And no one ever drifted to a destination they would have chosen. That takes intentionality.
Sure,
you never drift someplace that you would have chosen. And so that's really the drift. And the antidote to that, the alternative to that is design. You know, to live a life of design where you take initiative and you begin to become intentional in how you design your life.
I love it. Okay. So let's talk about that. How do we design our life? How do we design our legacy, as you put it in the book?
Yeah. So, you know, chapter two is really where we talk about understanding what the mission is and kind of this antidote. And it's the life plan, how we define it. Now, here's what it's not, Chris. I've been a part of big corporate strategic planning retreats. You probably do these in your company, you know, where we go on a 3-day offsite.
Once a year. It's a little harder with 480 staff all at the same time. So we break it up into two, actually. But there you go.
Well, so we would do it with our executives. So we would take about 70 guys away, and we would do this over the course of 3 days. We'd come back with, you know, action plans and timetables and Gantt charts and resource lists and all that. And we would take that big, fat binder, and we would put it on the shelf, and usually it would never see the light of day again. And that's not what we're talking about.
Money well invested there, huh?
Yes. Oh, my gosh. Crazy thing is we did it year after year. But, you know, really what a life plan is, and this is how we define it in the book, is that it's a short written document, usually 8 to 15 pages long. It's created by you, for you. And by the way, Chris, I know you're a big outsourcer, virtual guy. You can't outsource your life plan.
Can I not delegate this task?
You cannot do this. but it describes how you want to be remembered. It articulates your personal priorities, and it provides the specific actions necessary, and I'm just reading from the book, to take you from where you are to where you want to be in every major area of your life. And it's most of all a living document that you will tweak and adjust as necessary for the rest of your life. So that's the mission, to come up with this, what will become the rudder for your ship so that you just don't drift aimlessly on the ocean, but that you've got a mechanism for steering your life. That's a life plan.
I love it. Okay. You also mentioned in part two of the book, which is chapter 7 of the book. We're skipping a little bit here, but we can go back. You talk about dedicating one day. This was different for me because a lot of the times when I've done these kind of exercises before, it's broken out over a period of time.
Yeah.
Talk about this dedicating one day idea.
Yeah, so Daniel and I recommend you spend one day. And the reason we do this is because we live in a world where there's so much distraction, so much stuff competing for our attention, that if we try to do it piecemeal over some period of time, we're not going to give it our best deep reflective thinking. And you could do that in one day. And here's the deal. I don't know how it is where you live, but in the States, the average person spends 5 hours preparing to buy an automobile. That doesn't include test driving and negotiating the deal. the average bride, and I have five daughters, as you know, so I've been through these weddings four times now.
You'll know this.
I know. But I read an article recently. The average bride spends 39 days preparing for a wedding that's going to typically last less than an hour. So what we're asking you to do is to spend one day planning your life. And so that one day is critical. And we ask you to unplug. We give you an agenda. First of all, we tell you how to prepare for it, you know, how to set up your family for it, how to set up the office for it so that you're going to be away and you're going to be uninterrupted. And then what do you do when you actually get there? And really our promise, and we've taken thousands of people through this process, but our promise is that if you give us one day, if you follow the agenda, you will come out with a plan that will be a game changer for you, that will begin a transformation in your life that'll serve you well for the rest of your life. One day. That's all it takes.
I love it. I'm curious to know, how many times have you gone through this process yourself with your life plan and the tweaks that you, I mean, how regularly do you look back on things yourself? Because I know you truly do practice what you preach. It's one of the reasons why I love you so much. You really do walk
the talk. So I tweak it once a quarter and I revise it once a year. Okay. And as you move through the different seasons of your life, you'll have to do that. So I started in 2001, so I've just done my 15th life plan. But the life plan today looks very different than it did 15 years ago.
Sure.
When I had five daughters at home and, you know, I had a big corporate job. And today I'm an entrepreneur. I've got, you know, small company, 15 employees. And it's very different. No kids at home at all. So it requires that kind of tweaking and that kind of revision.
Sure. All right. Let's keep going on with this then. So I'm digging this. This is great. So dedicate one day. Now let's talk about the all important implementation.
Yes. Let's go back to the three questions that we help you answer in the life plan,
because this
is the key to it. So asking yourselves these three powerful questions are questions that will give you clarity, courage, and a commitment to see it through.
Okay.
So here's how it works. Question number one, and this is the legacy chapter, is how do you want to be remembered? And unfortunately, in our culture, everything tries to make us forget that we're mortal, that we're going to die one day. But that's one appointment that all of us are going to keep. We're going to be dead someday. Steve Jobs said prophetically 2 years before he died that death was the single best tool he ever encountered to give his life clarity. And I think that's absolutely true. And so we take you through an exercise where you write your own eulogy, where you create some legacy statements. And I saw this really seriously for me in 2005 when my father-in-law died. I was very close to him. He had an enormous impact on his children and upon my children and upon us. And he was an Air Force colonel. He died. We had a full military funeral with the flyover jets, 21-gun salute, all that. But what was really interesting is what happened next. We went back to our house, and we had our friends and our family members over, and we pulled out all these pictures, and we cried, and we laughed, and we told stories, and most of all, we talked about what his impact on, had been on us. And what I realized, Chris, is that when we die, there's going to be a lot of conversations. People are going to be remembering what kind of legacy we left. And leaving a legacy is not for the rich and the powerful, but it's for all of us.
Absolutely.
Leaving a legacy is inescapable.
Amen to that.
The only question is what kind of legacy you're going to leave.
Yeah.
But the cool thing is that we can begin to engineer those conversations now so that when we pass, our spouse or our children or our friends or the people that worked for us or our followers in social media will have things to say that we would be proud of. And so that's the legacy exercise, a bit morbid perhaps, but also incredibly clarifying and liberating.
A big slice of reality, though. I mean, a big slice of reality. And I think it's important to notice the fact. I think, you know, you don't need to have children. You don't need to be in, you know, a long-standing, loving relationship to sit down and figure out the fact that one day you're going to die. And then it's kind of, you know, then it's over for you and to a certain degree anyway. And you know, all you have at that point is the memories that you create around you, right? And for the people that you're leaving behind. You know, me and Urs, we sat down and we actually redid our will last year. And I'm in the middle of the will and I start bawling like a trooper, like my life depended on the fact that I needed to cry as many tears as possible at the dining table. And she said, "What is wrong? What is going on with you? Have you had too much wine?" And I said, "This is brutal. Like here, like the first time I did my will was probably, 5 years ago, I think. And here we are kind of revamping. We've had property and all the rest of it. And going through the will, I said, I'm going to die. Like one day, I'm done. And like this is, I'm crying my eyes out like a baby. And we had a little moment. it was one of those times where I really realized that, you know, this is not going to go on forever. It's not going to go on forever. And it's our children and it's the people that we interact with, the people that we touch that really matter at the end of the day.
That's exactly right. And we can either just kind of deny that, live in denial, or mm-hmm. we can start with the end in mind and be intentional about designing that time so that we do have a legacy that we would be proud of and that would be meaningful to the people that we love the most. Mm. But that's question one.
Let's go to question two.
So question two is, what matters most to you? Now, most people know what's important to their spouse. They know what's important to their parents. Mm-hmm. They know what's important perhaps to their boss if they have one, what's important to their shareholders and all the rest. But this is a question about what's important to you, and it's designed to give you courage. Because when you have a set of priorities that are ranked in order and you know what's most important down to what's least important, it gives you the courage in the moment to say yes to the things that truly matter and no to the things that are non-essential. And what happens to so many people is they get overwhelmed living other people's agenda. You know, they just can't say no, or maybe they have the fear of missing out, the dreaded FOMO. And by having a clearly articulated set of priorities, when push comes to shove and you're having to choose between good and better, it gives you a way to do that. I'll tell you a quick story. During the recession, our company had been a publicly held company, traded on the New York Stock Exchange. We were bought out by a private equity company. And, you know, everything was great. That was 2006. Then we hit the recession of 2008 and 2009, and the bottom fell out. You know, it was tough sledding, really difficult times. And so we were working long hours over a long period of months without really taking a break. But I had a vacation on my calendar with Gail to go to Colorado and spend a week just deep in the woods and just rejuvenating and tending to our health and our marriage and all that. Well, on the day that I left, and by the way, I'd cleared all this with my board of directors, but on the day that I left, I landed in Dallas to catch a connection to Denver, and I checked email for the last time, and there was a message from the chairman of my board, my boss, and he said, "Look, change in plans. We decided we need to come to Nashville on Monday. We've got some issues we need to sort through, and we'd really like you to be there." And I mean, my heart sunk. I was packed up. We had this week planned. We'd been dreaming about it for months.
Halfway there already. Right.
You're halfway there. And I said to Gail, I showed her the message and I was just sick. And she said, "Well, what are you going to do?" And I said, "Well, I don't know." And she said, "Well, look, you do whatever you need to do and I will back you 100%. She said, I don't know the complexities of all this. Only you do. Make the right decision." So I said, "I'm not going. I mean, I'm not going back to Nashville. I'm going to go on to Denver." So I wrote the chairman and I said, "Look, I've been planning this for months. I told you we were going away, and I'd really like to ask you to postpone this. I can't imagine that it's that urgent. If you really feel like you need to have the meeting, go ahead and come to Nashville. I'll tell my staff to be waiting. They'll answer all the questions you have. But I'm going to Colorado, and I'm going to be offline, and I'll talk to you in a week." And so I did.
See, that takes some cojones right there. To say that to your boss, that takes some cojones. I like that.
It was tough. And now here's the funny thing. I got back and I said to my staff, I said, "So how was that meeting?" And they said, "It was a totally non-event." They said they asked us questions that we could have answered in email. They said, "We think he was just, you know, trying to prove to his boss that he was on top of stuff and was coming down for that reason." I mean, nothing ever came of it. Nothing ever came with in terms of repercussions to me.
Right.
But here's the thing, Chris, because I had answered that question, what matters most to me? What mattered most to me was Gail, my kids, my own health, and then my career.
Right.
So my career was like 4 or 5 on my list. And so it gave me the courage in the moment when it was a difficult decision to make a decision that was principled, that was based on a clear set of priorities. So that's the second question.
Love it. Okay. Let's keep going. God.
Okay.
I feel like we need to, I need to be like in a lounge with a good glass of scotch with you. Is it weird to feel like that right now? I'm coming to Nashville, later in the year to speak at Jeff's event, right?
Well, you totally have to give me a heads up so that we can get together and have that scotch and talk about this.
Yes, we'll do that. Okay. Keep going.
So the third and final question is, how do you get from where you are to where you want to be in all the major areas of your life? So this is the fun one, because now, like a GPS system, we have to plug in the destination where we're going. We have to take stock of where we are currently, and then we let the system map the path. Okay. So the first thing is getting absolutely clear on what it is that you want in your life. And this is where so many people struggle. But to say, okay, what kind of marriage do I really want? Am I just going to drift and kind of hope we stay in love? Or am I going to create a relationship where we're passionate, where we have a deep friendship and a deep connection, and we're there for each other? You know, that can happen, but it's not going to happen if you just drift.
Yeah.
Same thing with your health. So let me just read this to you. So like, here's the one that I've got for my relationship with Gail. And this is my envisioned future statement. I said, my love for Gail grows daily. She is my best friend, my intimate ally, my partner and my lover. There is no one I would rather spend time with than her. We share with one another our deepest dreams, our secret fears, and our most profound experiences. We are always learning new things together. Though not perfect, our marriage is a model and encouragement to others. So that's the destination that I want to reach in my marriage. I'm not there yet. You know, there's always room for improvement.
Of course.
But I'm clear about the destination. Hmm. Once you get the destination locked in, and again, you do this in all the major life accounts. So maybe you have 9 accounts and you get a clear envisioned future statement for each one of them. You know, what's your envisioned future for your friendships? A lot of guys, you know, that are your age, that are my age, don't have a lot of deep friendships, and they don't happen without intention. You don't just drift into those. So to get clear on that, then in each one of these life accounts, you take stock and you say, okay, that's the envisioned future. That's where I'm going. That's what I want. But what's the current reality? You know, maybe in your health account, for example, and I've got an awesome health account statement.
Let's bring it up, because you are very active, and you know, we're not going to talk about exact ages or anything like that. But I mean, I feel my age now. Is that weird? Like, I feel like
no,
I'm
it's
43.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and it's kind of like, you know, I don't like exercising. Like, I'll be the first to admit it. It doesn't stimulate me in any way whatsoever. I really don't look forward to exercising. I truly don't. But I do it every single day because I know it's good for me and it'll help me live longer, plain and simple.
Absolutely.
That's it.
Absolutely.
I suck it up. That's what it is.
That's right. And I do the same thing, but I have a clear destination. And here's my envisioned future on my health. I'm lean and strong, possessing vibrant health and extraordinary fitness. My heart is strong and healthy. My arteries are supple and clear of obstructions. My autoimmune system is in excellent condition. I am disease, infection, and allergy resistant. I have more than enough energy to accomplish the tasks I undertake. This is because I control my mental focus, work out 6 days a week, choose healthy foods, take supplements as needed, and get adequate rest. That's the destination for me. Now,
love it.
What's the current reality?
Yeah.
So
where are we at?
This is where you just get painfully honest.
Right.
So a year ago, I said, look, I'm 9 pounds heavier than I want to be. That time I weighed 184. I'd like to be at 175. I was not doing much strength training. I was kind of hit or miss on my strength training. And so I hired a personal trainer and got really serious about doing the strength training 3 days a week. But it began by articulating the destination, being honest about the reality, and then saying, and this is the third part of this, what we call an action plan, what are the specific commitments that you're going to make in order to get from here to there? Now, here's one of the things I've discovered, Chris. A lot of people are hoping that they're going to win the lottery in some area of their life, or they're going to, you know, hit a grand slam that's going to fix everything in their health, or fix their marriage, or fix their career, or fix their finances. The truth is, most progress taps into the power of incremental change over time. It's the law of compound interest. Hmm. You know, it's making these small investments like you were talking about with your own working out, that little by little you get stronger and stronger. You lose weight, you gain financial strength, you build a marriage, whatever it is. Hmm. But it's not the big stuff, it's the little stuff and these specific commitments.
I love it. Now, I'm curious now. Let me indulge me here for a minute. Let's talk supplements real quick, because a lot of people, yeah. I think they, and I, this is so off target and I want it to be like a 60-second answer here, but I mean, a lot of people, I mean, in fact, pretty much everybody don't get the vitamins and the minerals that they truly need from a day-to-day basis. I know I supplement in certain ways. I'm curious to know what you are lugging down your gullet every day. What's Michael taking from a supplement regime?
I take a ton of stuff. And so I have three of my daughters are distributors for a essential oil company called doTERRA. I don't know if you've heard of it.
Okay.
But they've got a line of vitamins. So I take their, sort of their multivitamin, but I also take vitamin C, red yeast rice, DHEA, chromium picolate, cinnamon, pentothene, niacin, zinc.
How many pills are we talking D. here? What are we looking at?
Honestly, twice a day, I take almost a handful.
Wow.
And I didn't just do it. I just didn't concoct this on my own, but I see a nutritionist. And she does blood work on me once a quarter, and then she just tells me what's missing.
Right, right. See, that right there is someone who's in control of what's going on. They have that blood work done regularly, and although we do, you know, me and hers, we go to, and we have a full-blown executive checkup. It takes an entire day out of my
Love
schedule.
That.
And, you know, on the stress test with the treadmill and all. Yep. And she loves to talk about the fact that she does like 3 hours of yoga every day, and she's so fit and lean and all the rest of it. Yet when she gets on a treadmill, I always beat her, and I'm the one who had childhood asthma here. You know what I mean? And I beat her up because I do cardio every day, and all she's doing is glorified stretching. That's what I call yoga.
You're going to hear from yoga lovers.
I know. You're right. Well, I do it as well. I do it 3 times a week. I go to a hot vinyasa class 3 times a week because it's very good for my back. Since I had my surgery, it's very good for my back. Okay. Thank you for indulging me. I appreciate that. Let's get back to the book, though. Living Forward by Michael Daniel Harvey. Go on.
Yeah, so that's the three parts of the life plan. And again, only 8 to 15 pages. It's a blast to do it because for the first time, people feel like, oh my gosh, I can really imagine my life better. You know, as opposed to just thinking that you're a victim and you're passive and all these forces are acting on you. Now, all of a sudden to say, look, if I could really dream and dare to dream and not settle, but if I could create the kind of career that I want or the kind of marriage I want or the financial situation I want, I think the first step in creating anything is to state it. And there's something about writing this, and I really believe in journaling, and that's why this works in life planning. Thoughts disentangle themselves, passing over the lips and through pencil tips. Mm. So there's something about writing it and giving expression to it that is kind of the first part of the creative act. And that's why I love that. But then you got to implement it, of course, and that's what the whole last third of the book is about.
So let's cover that quickly before we wrap up. Okay. I'm mindful of your time. So, you know, we've worked on this. We've made our plan. We've worked through where we want to be, what people are going to say about us at our own funerals and blah, 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 blah. How do we hit the go button? How do we really implement this?
Yeah, well, one of the things you got to do is you got to make room to carry out those specific commitments. And look, most of us are overwhelmed, overcommitted, and our calendars are full. So you get the life plan and you go, what in the heck am I going to find time to do this stuff I've just committed myself to? And so we're very deliberate in this chapter, I think it's chapter 8, about implement the plan, about triaging your calendar. Now all of a sudden, because you have priorities and because you have a plan, you go back through your calendar and you ask yourself the question, what can be completely eliminated from my calendar that's no longer relevant? What could I postpone or negotiate my way out of so that I can create the margin I need to do what matters most? And then we talk about developing the ability to say no. And this is a muscle that for many people, they don't exercise enough.
Yeah.
Right.
I've struggled with this myself. I'll be honest with you, particularly.
I do
And you know, when you're building the platform and all the rest of it, I decided in 2012 that I was really going to focus in on building my own personal brand from a business perspective. Like I really wanted to build that brand, and it's worked, and it's given me so many opportunities. But for 2012 and 2013, I said no to no one. Chris, you want to come on a show? Yeah, get my name out there. Chris, you want to do this? Chris, you want to speak? And I was absolutely shattered by the end of 2013. I almost experienced burnout for the second time in my life. Wow. You know, I talk about my burnout from 2009 at the beginning of Virtual Freedom, and we've discussed it over dinner as well. But that for me, almost hitting it again and seeing the symptoms again, I pulled right back. I cleared my entire calendar for 2 weeks. Urs was juicing like crazy. I was sleeping like 10 hours a day. It was insane, Michael. I mean, like I caught it. I swear I caught burnout right at the last moment.
Wow.
But it's scary. And it's because I said yes to pretty much everything.
Yeah. And I think that's a pretty common experience. You know, part of it is that you genuinely want to be helpful to people. You know, so that's part of it. It comes from a good heart.
Yeah.
Part of it is, like most of us, you have FOMO, fear of missing out.
Yep.
You know, I just think if I don't do that, maybe that opportunity won't come back around.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of a recovering people pleaser. But the thing about priorities, the thing about priorities that I love is that I realize that like Greg McEwen teaches in Essentialism, your time is kind of a zero-sum game. Mm. You know, you got 168 hours a week. And if you're going to say yes to something, you got to say no to something else.
Every time.
And, you know, for me, I found myself about 4 years ago traveling around the country. I was speaking 60 to 70 times a year. I hated it. I was always in airports. I wasn't at home with my kids or my grandkids. And I said, I've got to seriously change this, and I've got to start saying no. And it was brutal at first. And one of the secrets I've learned, a couple things I've learned, and I talk about these in the book, is creating templates for saying no, especially to email requests, so that I don't have to deal with the anxiety each time somebody asks, that I've got a pre-thought, I think pretty helpful template for no matter what the request is. And so that's been hugely helpful to me. Another thing that's helpful to me is that I try to put a space between the request and my response. And usually that looks like it goes to my assistant and I let her say no. So if somebody says, hey, could you write an endorsement for this book? Well, first of all, I'm thinking in my head, that's a 12-hour commitment because I got to read the book.
You got to read the endorsement.
And so I say, hey, you know, I'd love to consider it. Get with Susie and we'll see if that's possible. So I don't commit.
Right.
But I get to be the warm and fuzzy guy, and I let her get to say no, and she does it in an incredibly gracious way.
Yeah.
So I think that's the first step in implementation is learning to say no to the non-essentials so that you can say yes to the things that are truly important, like the people that are going to be on the front row of your funeral. And it's not going to be the people that are in the back or the people that don't come. And those are the people that gunk up so much of our calendar
typically. Amen to that. Good gosh. Absolutely. Now, this was like the reality value bombs were just dropping on me left, right, and center. I mean, this for me, like I said, you know, at first I didn't feel like we really needed another book like this, but I truly believe because of the step-by-step approach, it brings like a little bit of calm to that storm to a certain degree of sitting down and actually working it out. Before we wrap up, we don't want to give out the entire book on a podcast. Although we've done a pretty good job, actually. Let's not mess around. We've done a pretty good job. You've also got here is, and I think this is incredibly, incredibly smart. And at the back of the book, you've got the Life Planner's Quick Guide.
Yeah.
Which is ultimately just a summary of the book to a certain degree. And there's links and there's resources and things you fill out, little gaps and all this sort of type of stuff. And I feel like why I feel like this wasn't really needed if you'd read the whole book, but why did you guys decide to go ahead and include this? I'm curious.
You know, we write books that we would like to read. Mm. And so that's one of the reasons we kept it short. But we also thought, you know, it'd be great to just have kind of a high level summary so that when someone wants to go back on an annual basis or even a more frequent basis and review it, they don't have to go through the whole book. They could just go to the quick summary, hit the high points, and it's all there for them. So I wished every book included that.
Yeah.
I sometimes buy those executive briefs of books, not because I do that instead of the book, but because I want a quick summary to remind me of the book, or sometimes just for an overview before I get into the book.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I love it. I think it's great. I think you've written a brilliant book with Daniel.
Thank you.
I look forward to hopefully at some point meeting Daniel. I just want to close on the fact that you did something that I'm sure it's not the first time it's ever been done, but I've never seen it being done by somebody that I personally know. So I wanted to give you a virtual high five and some kudos on this. But you and Daniel did. That was like the worst high five, virtual high five ever, by the way. We're on camera, everybody, if you guys listen to the show here. You and Daniel actually put on a live event in Nashville on stage a couple of days ago, and I was living, talk about FOMO, good gosh, if I could fly over at the heartbeat. I was living vicariously through yours and other people's Instagram and Twitter accounts, looking at what you were doing. This was like big, Michael. Holy moly. Like, this stage was huge. You had all these screens and lights. How many people were actually there? How many people turned up?
850 were there live.
Wow.
We thought there'd be about 1,500, but we made the mistake of planning it on Super Tuesday here in the States. And it just didn't occur to us. It wasn't on our radar. And the weather was really bad. There were tornado warnings and all kinds of stuff going on. But still, 850 people showed up. I mean, it looked full. We had another 3,000 people watching live online. But, you know, having been in the publishing business, I've been at a number of book launch parties. But we wanted to do the biggest, baddest book launch party ever.
It did. It looked
and
like
so
it to me.
We did it. And then we had an after party. That's where it would have been fun. So we had an after party in downtown Nashville at a private bar.
Nice.
And that was incredible. Even my mom, who is 81 years old, came. It was fantastic.
I love it. That's awesome. Well, I wish you guys all the best with this. I think it's going to do great. I mean, it's, you know it's going to help people. You know it's going to change lives. And at the end of the day, that's what we can really ask for the work that we create and put out into the world.
Yep.
Right? At the end
so
of the day.
True. So yeah. True.
For you guys tuning in, I sincerely suggest that you pick up a copy of Living Forward. You're going to see me talking about this on Twitter and Instagram and all the rest of it. Snapchat. Little bit of Snapchatting going on. You
nice.
Haven't you haven't jumped on the Snapchat bandwagon.
I haven't.
No, you're probably not going to, are you, at this point?
I'm probably not going to. I mean, that's a whole other episode. But to you and Cliff Ravenscraft, guys that are really going whole hog, God bless you.
Well, I wouldn't say I'm going whole hog on it, but I'm doing a little bit here and there just to see what happens with it. One thing that I've really enjoyed about it is that it has opened up relationships that I already had and kind of deepened them a little bit. And I kind of like that.
Great.
That's kind of cool. All right. So you guys tuning in, show notes, links to the book, everything else over on the blog, chrisducker.com/episode163. That's episode 163. I'll be back edge again and with another chat next week. We've got Lou Mangiello, ex-attorney turned Disney fan turned very, very successful podcaster and entrepreneur. He's going to be on the show dropping some value bombs for you on that. Michael, thank you one more time for being here. You're a real legend and a real inspiration.
Thank you, Chris. Always a delight to be with you.
All right. You guys, thank you very much for tuning in. See you next week. Until then, take care, be kind to each other, and go write out your life plan. See you soon.
If the idea of an entrepreneurial community where you get to learn from the best in the business, as well as rub shoulders, gain support, have access to immediate feedback, as well as nonstop accountability from your peers, is something that excites you, then visit youpreneur.com for more information and to get started on building a business you can truly be proud of today. That's youpreneur.com. We'll see you on the inside.